Welcome to Hyperlocal, the podcast inspiring economic developers, job creators, and community champions with local solutions and global perspectives. I'm your host, Mason Ainsworth. Thank you for taking the time to join us today, and let's get into it. Joining me today is Stephanie Panacco, a powerhouse in economic development and destination marketing. As president of the Economic Developers Council of Ontario, and Director of Corporate Communications and Stakeholder Relations at Sioux College of Applied Arts and Technology, she is on the ground and at the table making a difference in our communities. Stephanie brings a wealth of experience from her roles at Destination Northern Ontario, the City of Sault Ste. Marie, and the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry. Her expertise spans brand development, digital content promotion, media coordination, and building lasting stakeholder partnerships that put Northern Ontario on the map. In today's episode, we unpack the vital role of collaboration in northern and rural communities, real-world examples of successful partnerships that turn challenges into opportunities, and practical advice for emerging economic developers about navigating today's unpredictable landscape. Welcome, Stephanie, and thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So we'll hop right into things. I know when I chat with folks at conferences or events or things like that, it's always interesting to hear where people come from in life and kind of where they have gotten to and as a result of kind of what decisions and actions throughout their career. So I was just curious if you could tell us a little bit about your work in the economic development sector. How it's connected you with leaders, you know, across Ontario and outside of Ontario as well, and what sparked your passion in this field, and how your journeys led to you to where you are today.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, my story is a little interesting because I started my career, my first, you know, quote unquote real job, as I like to say, was with the Ministry of Natural Resources, and I worked in their policy division, and later in aviation, forest, fire, and emergency services. And, you know, that was really more aligned with my university degree, which was in technical writing. So, you know, it wasn't something that right off the bat that I was like, okay, I'm going to be in economic development. But when I started my first job in the political sphere, I was working for a municipality in the mayor's office. And at the time, you know, the executive director of the Northern Ontario Heritage Fund Corporation was really hot to trot on economic development. It was Bruce Strapp, if you've ever heard that name floating around. He was quite, you know, an inspirational leader in the economic development sector in Northern Ontario specifically, and it was really an advocate for economic development. So my time at the mayor's office was facilitated through an internship with NOHFC, and Bruce was really, really adamant that I should take my certification in economic development through EDAC. And I kind of just jumped in. And I realized when I was there, you know, doing this course, that economic development really is tied into everything. I didn't quite understand at first, you know, with somebody who was more on the community partnerships and public relations side, how that could integrate into economic development. But I quickly found out that that's a huge part of economic development, is relationship building and community partnerships. So I think that's kind of what it was, the impetus of having someone advocate for the profession and then jumping in and realizing it's really interwoven into, you know, everything we do when we're working in government, when we're working in political offices, when we're working in municipalities. It's so interwoven into the work that we do that I really think it could benefit people, you know, really across the board, but specifically for me, it kind of led into my path of economic development to where I am now today. I'm president of the Economic Development Developers Council of Ontario. And, you know, most of the work I do in outside of my office is tied to economic development.
I love that. And there's a few things I just wanted to pick up on there. The first one being that you're a policy nerd. I think that's very cool. As someone who's also a policy nerd, I think that's really exciting, and it shows that just because you're a nerd in policy doesn't mean you can't do some really cool stuff. So I just want to say thank you for giving our team some more support. And then also I think that's it makes a lot of sense, when you look at these different industries and such, that economic development is woven into them, and it is something that folks need to think about. I know back when I was a city councilor, it's something we talked about a lot. But now that I've been, out of politics for a while, and I've done the training with Waterloo, the year one and the year two, and the amount that I learned through that process, I really wish I could go back in time and have some of those debates and discussions with the knowledge that I now currently have about economic development, and how it kind of more works behind the scenes and the inner workings of it. Because I think, what you said, it all interconnects, and it's really easy to see once you take the time to learn a bit about it.
Yeah, and it's funny about like the policy nerd thing. It's like, whenever do you get a high five on the policy side? But I remember when I started in that field, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is a little dry. But as I've gotten, further and further in my career, I lean into policy so hard now that my appreciation for the policy work, which I'm not directly involved in now, is it just grows all of the time. You start to realize how important policy work is as you start working with different stakeholders and in different levels of government and through different governance boards. And I same with you. I just want to plug policy really quickly there because it is so important. And I think the sooner you realize that in your career, the more acuity you have politically and more political sensitivity you have when you understand policy more. So I completely agree with you.
Awesome. That's great. I love the policy love, and I'm sure a few of our listeners will appreciate that as well. Getting into our next question a bit, local impact is something significant that we hear a lot about. And I was curious, through your experiences, if you could share maybe a specific project that you've either led or contributed to that's made a difference in Ontario, and whether that's through areas like job creation or business attraction or community growth or whichever area you see fit.
For sure. So I know, I was happy to kind of put some thought behind this one because it's been an interesting and long career, but I am probably most proud of a project that I got involved in through our District of Sault Ste. Marie Social Services Administration Board. And I bring it up today because I really want to stress how broad economic development can be. And I think in times like this, it's really important to think about the empowerment that economic development can bring in sectors that are, otherwise thought of as more of a burden. And social services has, taken it on the chin, I would say, quite a bit in the past 5 years, with our increased rates of mental health and addiction, our housing crisis, strain on the EMS system. So whenever I can really highlight how economic development plays into social services, I try to because I think it's so important. But in Sault Ste. Marie, we started an affordable home ownership program. And essentially, in a nutshell, what we did is we took people who are in receipt of Ontario Works and identified houses that were, I would say, undervalued available on the market, and purchased those through our housing corporation and used the Skills Development Fund to train those people in receipt of Ontario Works to do the renovations and construction on the home that would then be resold to a family in need that was identified as a best bet in the community so they could get out from underneath rent and become a home owner. And we've actually seen almost 100 new skilled workers enter our workforce through the program. And of course, the other side of this is they're no longer in receipt of Ontario Works, which is a huge deal to, the government of Ontario, the burden on the system. And I really just, every time I do a ribbon cutting at one of these homes, it's the intangible feeling of people being empowered through economic development. And, you know, these folks who have, you know, had these tra this training, they go on and they join our workforce. And it's just such an exciting thing to think about this holistic approach to community development and addressing a social need while ensuring, you know, we're meeting all of these targets that we're seeing coming out of the Ontario government around skills development. And I just challenge all of my colleagues to think about economic development in more unique and unorthodox ways, because there's a thousand ways to skin a cat, and that one I'm very, very, very proud of.
That's incredible, and I think that that really speaks to the community building that we hear about in economic development. And I think that's a good example for folks to think about things a little bit differently, because really what you're doing there is so much. First of all, you're giving folks the skills they need to be successful on their own in the future, which is just huge from a sense of purpose perspective. As well as getting, more room for other folks who need it in some of these programs, but also providing folks with a home that they can call their own. I think those things by themselves are extremely powerful. And when you're, putting them together in a program, I think that's just exceptional. So I just want to say thank you for the time and effort that you put into that.
Absolutely. And you know, I it's it I understand there's a real big draw around really big, you know, splashy projects with FDI and you know, things that are a little bit, I don't want to say, you know, more cut and dried in nature, like the traditional sense of economic development, because those projects are great and they're so impactful and they're in your face great. But I do think in today's day and age, with where we're at and the challenges we're facing on local levels, we really need to think about these smaller pockets where we begin to empower people to contribute more significantly to our GDP, to the economy, and really changing the narrative around some of the more, you know, significant social challenges that we have in our communities. And I think it's great to have these big investments, but we also have to think more grassroots around economic development as well.
100% for sure. And my dad always told me growing up, he said, if you look after the little things, the big things wind up looking after themselves. And I think it's with those little things that, hey, even if it's not affecting a large percentage of people, or it's not going to be something, flashy in the news, it does have a very large impact. And when you take that and you compound that over years, it makes a huge difference for folks, whether it's, in their community or in their personal lives as well.
For sure.
And speaking of community, I know there's a lot of great things going on, which you mentioned there. You talked about some of these bigger projects as well. There's a lot of great things going on in different communities, but often those can have challenges associated with them as well. So I was curious if there's a key obstacle that you have faced in a project and how you took that obstacle and maybe turn that into an opportunity for growth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'll first speak up fairly plainly about where I'm from in the province, which is good context. You know, I'm from Sault Ste. Marie. I'm from a northern community. And you know, usually when there's a challenge in a northern community, it's basically across the board in our large urban centers up here. And people in the north are, and I don't, and this is mostly rural Ontario, and I always like to say that because rural Ontario shares a lot of our same struggles, but we become extremely resourceful in Northern Ontario, and I think it's become pretty commonplace here to advocate as one voice. You know, we see that in economic development, we see that in social services, we see that in post-secondary, we see that in tourism, you know, natural resources. People understand up here that we really have to come together to have a strong enough voice at Queen's Park, to really advocate for our needs up here. So knowing that there's limited resources and significant workforce gaps in Northern Ontario, every project comes with its own challenges. Now, as far as a specific project goes that I can talk about, you know, I really wanted to talk about the tourism industry with you because I think that's one of the things that, from an economic development perspective, is kind of like the kid brother often at times. But it makes a really, really big impact. And I spent 10 years in the tourism industry, and I think that that's a great example of where we had a really common challenge across Northern Ontario, especially when we were faced with the pandemic. So when the pandemic hit, we lost about 90% of our traditional market from the US drive market, which is really significant. It was a huge hit to our gross GDP coming out of our industry. It was in the billions of dollars. And tourism is an underfunded sector as it is. And I would say it's still, it hits above its weight usually in return. But we knew that resources were limited. And every single northern community came together. This was mostly after the implementation of the municipal accommodation tax. Got together, identified the problem, and pooled together some investment and went to the province and said, hey, like, we really need to hit the domestic market hard to ensure these operators and businesses and remote lodge owners, like, we're talking about 1,600 businesses across the north minimum, are able to, still have the visitation they need to keep their doors open. And that took a lot of conversation, that took a lot of concessions, and understanding the unique need in each community and their rural areas. But we were able to get to a place where we could take it to our PMO, our provincial marketing organization, and they actually came to the table and put up some significant investment. We were able to increased domestic visitation through that effort by about 55%. And that was quite incredible in the face of the pandemic. And I use that example because, again, I wanted to kind of give a shout out to tourism and all the great work that they do in that sector, but also the power in working together with your like-minded communities across your specific region and how that can make an impact when you are in lockstep and you're all saying the same thing. We see this when we go to AMO and Roma, and if you're stronger together when your voice is united. And I think that's so important in economic development. And I think it's so important even at the granular level of when we're going to council and we're advocating for projects, you really have to have all your partners on the same page to tell that narrative about why this is a good idea, why you need it. And that everybody's on board to make it happen. So, in the context of Northern Ontario and how we work up here, I think that that's a really good example, of the challenges we see, but also the strength we have by working with a common purpose.
Absolutely. And stronger together, I think that's a really solid message, whatever you're working on, but especially in economic development. And some of these asks at whether it's at a local council or with a province can be significant, as you've identified in regards to funding. And the stronger you can come to the table and say, hey, listen, this isn't just one group saying this, this is an entire community that spans beyond ward boundaries or provincial and federal ridings, that it is, our people that want to make these things happen. I think that's a lot more successful when it comes to the table.
Absolutely.
And I know we've touched a lot about local stuff, but I know through your role, you've got into a bit of the global perspectives as well. And there's, we could talk all day about different things going on in the world, but I'm curious what you're hearing from folks in the industry, whether it be from different EDCO members or other associations, maybe other provincial associations or federal ones. And then for anyone who's listening who wants to get involved and help with some of the stuff that's going on in the world right now, I'm just curious what types of things you'd recommend, whether that's getting involved with associations or going to elected officials or what. You are the expert, so please tell me.
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. And I'm happy to kind of share some insights from the EDCO side. Pretty loud and clear, we've heard a consistent message through EDCO that, there are global trends that are creating local challenges across the board. Workforce labor gaps, workforce mobility, supply chain challenges, how the digital transformation has affected the workforce and the workplace. I really think that these things resonate with all municipalities and all of those working, in economic development. And I think for, EDCO members, the ask is really around, how do we stay relevant and adaptable, but also how do we collaborate together? I've been volunteering with that organization for probably over a decade now, and I think now more than ever, there's a willingness to be more collaborative in the sense of identifying issues that we can get behind together. There's been more of a push in the advocacy space with EDCO than I've ever seen. And, again, you want to talk about nerding out. This is where I get really excited. And I'm so grateful in a way that this has coincided with my time as president, because we're moving into that space, as gently and respectfully as we can. But we have this huge representation of EDOs across and municipalities across the province, and we're really trying to harness that power when we go to tables with decision makers and political leaders to advocate on behalf of this sector, because there's things that affect us all in our roles as EDOs and working with municipalities. So I think right now what we're seeing is some of these global trends being reflected in the needs of our members from a communications and advocacy standpoint. And this is a space that EDCO can really move into and I think bring value to their members. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited about that. And I also think, I don't want to say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, but you, I'm sure, know just as well as I do that if someone is keen to get involved or passionate about a particular issue or project, you get involved. I volunteering for local boards, joining economic development groups, supporting specific skills training initiatives that would affect a large project in your community. These are the places where you need to get into this space, because there's so much power in just being involved. I say this to people all the time when they come ask me about my career, or maybe they're seeking some advice about something. And saying yes is extremely powerful when you have an opportunity. You never know who you're going to meet when you say yes. And you never know, what kind of influence you're going to have and what table. I often laugh and I say, if I end up in in a position where I have a decision-making opportunity, I go, I don't know who trusted me with this, but I'm here now, happy to be here, because sometimes it just is about saying yes. So, the twofold answer around, trends and challenges for people across the province, but also to get involved in those challenges is really just a matter of kind of pulling up your socks and saying, hey, I'm just going to say yes, and I'm going to be in the room, and whatever room that is, you don't know what other door will open on the other side of it. So, if anybody is interested actually in getting involved in economic development, I'll put a plug in here for EDCO. We have countless committees and opportunities to get involved with the board, and it is a great organization to get to know your colleagues across the province for sure.
That is wonderful advice, and I think saying yes and getting involved is can make such a huge difference in the world, and also just as an individual. I remember at EDCO this year, there was a young guy I met, and first time I think at a conference, and I was talking to this other woman, and she had said something along the lines of, oh, well, one of my colleagues unfortunately wasn't able to make it, so I have an extra ticket. And I said to the guy, I said, oh, do you have a ticket to the president's dinner? And he said, well, no. And I said, well, she's saying this right now. And she's like, yeah, I have an extra ticket. And I looked at him, I said, just nod your head, say
Yay.
yes. And then eventually he said yes. And I saw him at the event, and he's like, hey, thank you so much. for encouraging me to actually do that. Because I said, listen, like, what else were you going to be doing? You're going to maybe go out for a drink with some friends or watch a show on TV when you had this opportunity to be in the room with a lot of these decision makers and see some phenomenal speeches and learn and network. And but to do that, you have to say yes. And so I think that is phenomenal advice.
Yeah, for sure. Saying yes and getting very comfortable with being uncomfortable is probably the next like step in that logic, because I think sometimes we get worried about not having a place at the table or in the room, and that's uncomfortable. But becoming very comfortable with that feeling of uncomfortable really is empowering in getting you in the places that, your mind wants to go, but maybe physically you're not there. So that's, those, it's a kind of a twofold thing, to your point with the extra ticket, that's probably where the apprehension came from. But at the end of the day, it was hopefully a great decision for that individual. So yeah, I think that's a great point.
I really like that. Being comfortable with being uncomfortable. I
Yes.
think that sounds so interesting, but it makes so much sense when you think about that. And I heard someone, before they said, if you're comfortable with a group of people when you're, going out to network and such, then you need to move on to the next group. And we always thought that was kind of funny in politics. But speaking of being uncomfortable, this takes us to our next question, which, depending on who you speak with, can be a cause of tension for sure. Definitely in the economic development industry, but also I would say pretty much every other industry right now. And that's in regards to AI and innovation. And I'm curious, with exploring AI's role in economic development, have you seen AI or different AI digital tools, and seeing them have an impact right now, whether it's enhancing economic development strategies or reshaping them, or what's something out there with AI, whether it's now or in the future, that you're really excited about?
Yes, so AI, it's, oh my gosh, like where to start? And it's funny, I think we all see the writing on the wall with certain things with AI, right? When it comes to data analysis and talent attraction and forecasting, like these are all things that I think the economic development sector will really really benefit from. But coming from my seat here today, and sometimes I sound like a broken record talking about the North all the time, but this isn't just for the North, this is for rural communities as well. The thing I think I'm most excited for right now in the AI space, because the potential is huge, but in the here and now, if it's used correctly, the amount of bandwidth it can give a one-person economic development department in a small community in Northern Ontario is pretty phenomenal. AI is not great at everything right now, but it certainly is at a lot of things. And I would argue at things that probably eat up a lot of people's time when they're doing an administrative a job at a municipality. And I'm a light touch person when it comes to AI. I tread very lightly, and I can see the potential, from a more global perspective when it comes to economic development and investment attraction. But what really excites me is what it's going to do to free up the mental bandwidth of small communities that are looking to get proposals together and, want to dive further into funding opportunities for their community, or are trying to put together white papers, around an investment opportunity in their area, but they just don't have the capacity. And how AI can start to help, frame these things and forecast these things for them, so they can spend more time doing the important work they need to do on the ground with their council, with their elected officials, with their funding partners. So mine's a little bit more lighter touch, but when I what I see across the North is really more of a capacity building exercise through the adaptation of AI in the office.
Interesting. And I think that's a very a logical perspective on it for sure. Is, as you said, freeing up the mental bandwidth. I think that's so important, because the more time that folks can get available, the more that they can do. And especially for those smaller rural communities, or even I would say even some of the small urban cities where they just have one person. There's only so many hours in a day. And when you're getting pulled in 10 different directions, or your title has three different departments in it, it's very difficult to spend the time you need to on some of these really important projects. So I think if you can free up a little bit of time from, maybe some of these tasks, as you mentioned, that are a little bit lower on the scale, that you can put some more time behind that, maybe 20%, that's going to make a really substantial difference.
Yeah, and but that thought is also very scary because, to empower people to use AI in that kind of way at the office is, and especially when it comes to things like funding applications and project briefs and, data analysis and really building a case around, let's say an investment project, like that's all great. But this comes with a significant amount of training, a significant amount of respect for the tool, an understanding that there still needs to be, critical thinking taking place on these projects. So it's a double-edged sword where I see great potential for smaller communities who adapt AI, but I also worry about how it's implemented, and people understanding that there's still a lot of critical thinking that needs to take place in order to really lean into the help that AI could give on the capacity front. So, I mean, I struggle with that in my own world. When I'm encouraging, someone, take the load off a little bit, look for a little bit of help here, but you really need to critically think about these projects. And I don't want to see the world go on autopilot at all, and I
That's
do
for
worry
sure,
about
sure.
that.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And since you mentioned that, I'm just gonna pull in a little story here. So I was actually out walking with my son the other day. Ran into an old professor who's still active teaching, and I was chatting to him about AI, and he said, "You know what's really funny?" He's like, "I let my kids, call them kids, use AI, and one of them was doing a presentation. Not sure what it was on. Let's say it was on." Dressers or something like that. So the presentation, I guess, he created with AI. And so the title is something about dressers. But then in the actual presentation itself, it was talking about like soccer balls or something. And so the guy's up there and he's reading off this presentation, and it's not even about the subject that his presentation is on. And like didn't even like notice. And I was like, "Are you serious? Like, is this a true story?" And he's like, "Mason," he's like, "I'm telling you, I sat there and I was like, I'm just gonna let this guy keep going and see what happens." And then he talked to him after, and he's like, "You realize like you weren't like, what did you do? Just make this like 5 minutes before you came in here? Because it was not even about your subject." And that I think really shows some of the fear that I have with folks, is that they just rely on these things and they don't fact check them, and they just think, "Oh yeah, this is the great magical potion that I can take and it's going to do everything for me." But that's not the case. You still have to have that critical thinking. You still have to check things. You still have to, have the knowledge to be able to use this as a tool. And that's really what I see it as, is a tool, not as a replacement for folks. And I hope that I'm right, so that I can still have a job down the road.
I 100% agree with you. And I think we're going to see that more and more as younger people enter the workforce and they've just grown up with this as something that's very commonplace. Like, just like Windows 95 was like second nature to anybody who was born in the 80s and in the 90s, it's something that they're just going to have that's commonplace. And I, now we're getting into a bit more of a broader conversation about how it affects the workforce and the education sector and how people are using it. But this is where I come from in terms of capacity building and implementing it in a positive way because it is so powerful, but it's also it could really make your organization, your institution, your municipality look pretty stupid too. So it's something to
100%.
be careful about. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. So just switching gears a little bit, and because we don't actually want to go and ask AI this, but I'm sure it would have insightful stuff. But the reality is, it wouldn't have I believe, as insightful as what you will have, especially as president of EDCO. I think you're going to bring a really unique perspective to this question. And the question is around advice for new economic developers. For someone who's just starting out in their economic development journey, what is one key lesson or strategy that you would share with them to help them make a lasting impact in their role or in their community or wherever they are in the future?
Well, you know, it's funny. We kind of touched upon probably one of my favorite ones, which is, you know, always try to always say yes. And that idea about being comfortable with being uncomfortable, because economic development is truly about relationship building. There's no doubting that that is fundamental in economic development. You know, I've seen a lot of smart economic developers who have very little social skills. And then, you know, you go to the next guy at the table who may not know, you know, one project from another, but he's extremely good at networking. And like, you could argue that they're both equally successful. So I think that it goes a long way to, you know, getting out of your comfort zone and really engaging with the network around you. But at the same time, you know, my dad always told me, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. And I think the other thing, for new economic developers, really any new person coming into the workforce, but especially for economic development, because your stakeholders are so important, listening is so important. Like, deeply listening to the needs of your community and stakeholders, and really trying to understand, with the intent of understanding first, is it's fundamental. You know, when you're new and you're keen to, you know, save the world and solve all the problems, often I think we find ourselves jumping to conclusions to try to, you know, solve a complex problem, but maybe we don't understand the issue. Another thing that can really happen often is not understanding that there's people who have come before you who have been working on, you know, a particular file or in a particular community for years. And, you know, you come into the field, you're hot to trot, you're excited, but it can bite you. It can bite you in the butt because, you know, you're not really doing that deep listening. So I would say to anyone who's starting in the field is to, you know, don't be shy, but also know when to listen, because it's powerful. And I would argue that it is usually impressive to more seasoned economic development professionals when they feel like someone's taking the time to understand the issue. But yeah, I would say that that would be really important. And don't be afraid of mentors. Like, mentorship is so important. You know, I think it's a powerful tool that not a lot of people take advantage of. But if you have an opportunity to do it, and it is available through EDCO,
Yeah, I was
take
just going to say,
it.
shameless plug. I have a mentor through EDCO and it's been
Yes.
wonderful. So, highly
No.
recommend.
Yeah, because I mean, it's important, and so that I think that's what I would say in terms of advice.
I think that's incredible. And I just want to underline one thing you said in there, which was listening with the intent of understanding. And I think that's so crucial. And I can tell you, I've been in probably way too many government meetings with groups presenting and such. But the reality is, a lot of times I've observed people who are in those meetings and they say, oh, yeah, we're listening to stakeholders and we're listening to this and we're listening to that. But it's just because it's something that has to happen as part of the process, as opposed to listening with the intent of understanding and learning from those folks, as you mentioned, because there is a lot of experience. If someone's been working on a project for 10, 15 years, they know the project way better than you ever will. So if you don't take the time and you just say, hey, well, yeah, I listened to this person. Well, yeah, that's great, but did you actually understand what they were saying? And I can think of a time when my wife said, yeah, like you're listening, but you're not understanding what I'm saying. So you can apply that in a personal life as well.
100%. I often say, are you listening, just waiting for your turn to talk? And, you know, that's not really listening.
I love that. That is bang on. So I'm gonna mention that her ugh, mention that to her later. I think she will appreciate that because I know there's been times where before I had an idea and I'm just waiting for her to stop so that I can say because I don't want to interrupt. And but then I missed. Oh, sorry. Like, what was for dinner? And she's, I just told you. So those things definitely happen. I know something that I'm working on. So jumping to our last question, we have a mystery question for you from another guest. I don't usually read them before. So this one is kind of a little bit similar to our last question, but it is for someone new to economic development, aiming to land their first role as a at an economic development organization, like a municipality or an agency. What are the three key steps you would recommend for them to break into that field and secure that job?
Ooh, that's a good question. Okay, so I'm gonna go slow so I can make sure I gather my thoughts here. Number one, I would find some way to be recognizable. So if you really know you wanted to land a job with that particular municipality or organization or institution, I'd find a back door somehow. Is there committee work you can take on before the interview? Can you volunteer in some way? Does the HR manager play pickleball at your YMCA on Thursdays? Is there a way that you can show your face as a non-applicant first? Because I think that goes a really long way. A really long way. The second thing I would say is really try to understand the climate in which that organization is in the here and now. What are their challenges? Do a good media scan on them. What's the general feeling of them in the community? Are they facing significant challenges? Do they have a recent win? Is there a way that you can show that you're invested in the organization, even though you don't work there already? Because that I find also goes a long way, but it also helps prepare you should you ever land an interview or an opportunity to talk to leadership. I know any time that I've ever done any hiring, I've always been impressed by folks who have taken the time to understand where the organization is at. It's impressive that someone could take the time to look into that, but also it shows like, okay, this person's proactive and trying to understand the opportunities for the organization and the municipalities. And I would probably say the last thing, and I'm going to plug it again, and we've talked about this, but if there's an opportunity for upskilling in your economic development profession, taking year one, taking year two, doing some courses online. I know Brock Dickinson has some really good online courses. How can you kind of beef up that resume to show that you have a good solid foundation of economic development? And how current is that understanding? So I would probably say those three things would be where my mind would go first.
Those are excellent. So I think those are really on the ball. And I think a very unique perspective as well. And that opportunity to be recognizable, finding quote unquote those back doors, whether it's meeting someone at to pickleball. I think that's a great example. And but no, it's just doing your research and figuring that out where you can get those opportunities to say yes and to get in with those folks and obviously understanding the climate and what's been going on there is great. And the opportunity to upskill, I'm a big believer in life is a never-ending journey where we need to push ourselves and challenge ourselves. And if we're not learning, then what's the point? And so I think that is very, very sage advice, and I'm sure people will really appreciate that. I know I've really appreciated your answers today, and I've learned a ton from you. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for the opportunity, and also thank you for saying yes to the interview today. I really appreciate having you on.
Absolutely. I really appreciated the conversation and I feel very honored that you asked me to do it. I'm always happy to talk to you, Mason.
Yeah, I re really appreciate that. I'm sure we will chat soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. When I'm out and about, whether I'm, biking or walking or driving, I love listening to podcasts. So it really is special to me that you took the time to tune into Hyperlocal today and listen to our podcast. I want to make sure we're able to give you the best content possible in the future, get the speakers you want, talk about the topics you want, and really make a difference in your community. We want to focus on those little things. And a big thing to help us do that would be if you could take this opportunity to make sure that you're following the channel. If you want, feel free to turn on the notifications and we can make sure you get notified on the next episode. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for caring about economic development and caring about your community. And keep up the good work. You're not alone out there.